Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. If you were one of the thousands of people out shopping for the holidays this past weekend, you probably noticed bookstores were overflowing with customers. That should be no surprise since books make great gifts. In what has become a holiday tradition, we have assembled our panel of Smart Talk bookworms to discuss and recommend books that someone on your gift list would enjoy or maybe you would like to read. Joining us today is Catherine Lawrence, co-owner of the Midtown Scholar Bookstore in Harrisburg. Dr. Travis Kurowski, an assistant professor of creative writing at York College of Pennsylvania, and Carolyn Blatchley, who is the executive director of the Cumberland County Library System. Welcome to the three of you.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us, Scott.
Thanks, Scott. Good morning.
If you have a book that you would like to read, a book that you have read, a book that you would recommend for others to read, maybe recommend as a gift. I know there's a lot to think about there. But here's the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. You can also leave your suggestions or recommendations via email at smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Well, nothing says the holiday season to me like our annual show where we talk about books to give as holiday gifts. I know that this is a program that our audience looks forward to all year long, and I've heard so many people over the years say, oh, I heard about that book on the program and got it for my husband or my grandson or my son or daughter. So we have lots of recommendations, and I should say also that on our website, WITF.org, under Smart Talk, all the recommendations that our panel is making today, we have them listed as well. And I actually have made some recommendations this year as well. I wanted to do something that's a little bit different than what we've done in previous years. I mean, basically, I've just opened it up and ask the three of you, well, Carolyn, this is your first time on the program.
It is.
So this is what with the other two. We try to have some variety in the program. But anyway, that just open it up and ask you to recommend some books. Something a little different today. I'm going to ask us to start with a children's book. Since it is the holiday season, we have parents, we have grandparents out there, and definitely want the kids to read. So each of you have made recommendations for some children's books, as well as young adult books. But we'll start with the kids' books to begin with. Catherine, what about you?
Oh, so many wonderful books that I could recommend. Our staff's top pick is called Sulway by Lupita Nyong'o. And she, you may know her as having been in 12 Years a Slave, the Academy Award-winning film. And it's illustrated by Vashti Harrison, who's come to the bookstore and given demonstrations on her illustration before. She's the illustrator of Little Leaders, Bold Women in Black History, and an entire series of dreamers and stories about famous black women and men. But this story is just a charming picture book about a little girl who has skin the color of midnight, and she feels uncomfortable with this, and it's a story about how she wants to be beautiful and bright, and a magical journey through the night sky helps her see all that is beautiful in the world. And so it's a charming tale. The illustrations are just adorable, and yet it also has great words for what is beautiful, what is magic, that that the reader who reads along with you can learn all these wonderful words for really how to have self-esteem and learn about one another.
One thing I have to add about this year as well is that all of our panelists, and I've brought some in too, we have stacks of books in here. Yes, we know it's radio, but we will put some photographs on our website, witf.org/smarttalk. But Catherine, just looking over at the book that you just mentioned, it is beautiful. I mean, the cover itself is just outstanding, and as I see you paging through it, the illustrations, that would really get any child's attention, that's for sure. So Travis, what about you? What about your children's book recommendation?
Sure, yeah, and back to Sulway for just one second. I've been seeing this book all over. It's all over my library and bookstores. I've been looking forward to checking this out myself. But yeah, my book for the younger kids, but actually I enjoy it a lot too at 41. I brought in my 9-year-old daughter, Zoe, actually discovered it at the Odyssey Bookstore over in South Hadley, Massachusetts. But I've seen it all over here. She actually saw it days before and asked me to buy it for at the Scholastic Book Fair at her school, York Today School. But it's a very short, entirely true history of unicorns by Sarah Lascow, with illustrations by Sam Beck. Sarah Lascow, so I thought it was just a book about unicorns, and I was like, yeah, my daughter bought another book about unicorns. it's a lot cooler than that. When I started reading it with her the night we got home that evening from Massachusetts, I discovered it's actually a history book, but for kids. I mean, it's filled with illustrations. It's only 90 pages long. It's hardcover. It's gorgeous. But it goes through the history of how we've thought and understood unicorns in a really engaging, insightful, really captivating way. Sarah Lascow is the science editor for The Atlantic, I later discovered. I mean, Sam Beck has done a lot of work on other kids' books. But it's a wonderful book. I didn't know there was this whole history for thousands of years of cultures around the globe, from Tibet to ancient Greece to China to even North America, of them having either fossil records of things they thought were unicorns, of other animals they thought were unicorns, or just kind of myths and mysteries about the unicorns. And it was a really fascinating sort of history to go through with my daughter.
So, Travis, here's the most important question. Did your daughter like the book?
She loves the book.
Okay, there we go. That's that's the testimonial that we were looking for. That sounds like it. What is it again?
It's a very short, entirely true history of unicorns.
Well, it is, and it's a nonfiction.
It is.
It is a nonfiction for kids. So, Carolyn Blatchley, what about you? The libraries obviously have a whole children's section.
Oh, my.
So what
would you recommend? Yeah, bins and bins of children's books. And I recommended, I believe, four
different picture books.
But the one that I chose to talk about right now is called There Are No Bears in This Bakery. And it's a the author's had several books, but she had the New York Times bestseller, The Bear Ate Your Sandwich. And so it's sort of a follow-up to that, I guess. But anyone who lives in this area knows that we have to bait bears.
We have bears, yeah.
And do you know what they use to bait bears in traps? Donuts.
Ah,
and so this
I can understand
story,
that.
Yeah, so this story really struck me as appropriate. Muffin the cat, she tells a firsthand account of how the cat keeps the neighborhood safe from intruders. And this time the cat hears a mysterious new sound. And so when the cat investigates, when Muffin investigates this, she finds a baby bear in the bakery. And this story is told, it's full of similes that keep the tone very light as she meets with these bears. I'll just read some of these to you. Up close, the bear smelled like old socks, cinnamon, and adventure, which I just loved. And everything seemed fine with that baby bear until the mama bear, or it could be the pup, I guess, shows up. And they say it's an enormous bear. It smelled like a dumpster on a hot day. So Muffin manages to handle that and keep the bakery
clear of
bears. Well,
there are a lot of senses being used with that description. So name of the book again?
The name of the book is There Are No Bears in This Bakery. And it's full of nighttime scenes that are bathed in blues and blacks and the yellow streetlights.
Very colorful.
It's fantastic.
It really is. All right, let's take a phone call from Abby in Halifax. Abby, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I am calling about a book I found recently. It's a children's book also, The Penderwicks. And I just love it because it's just wholesome and timeless. And it's just a great family story for a read aloud or a young adult. So I thought I'd share.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your call. When she say that it is timeless, that is a book that has been around for a while. And that's something that I can tell our audience, that we're not just talking about new books, but some of the classics as well. I mean, I just started reading again, probably for the third time now, Team of Rivals. There we go.
Oh, yes,
yeah.
Right.
I'm up to page 200 again. It's a 725-page book, but I'm reading it for the third time just because, you know, the second time, picked up some things, didn't get the first time. So, you know, many times do that, that we're read a book again that you really like. But Team Rivals, one of my favorites. All right, so let's talk about some other books, maybe some books that adults would like to give this year. Travis, what do you have?
What don't I have?
I know.
I was sitting out. I'll mention two books really quick. One I was reading last night when I went to bed, and one I was reading in your parking lot as I waited to come in this morning. And both are just, they make me rethink what a book should be and what I should be writing and what to do with my life and everything. So the first book is by Girl. It's a new novel by Edna O'Brien. I think it just came out.
It's called what now?
Girl.
Just the single word, girl.
Edna O'Brien, I think she's 88 years old. She's been writing since she was probably in her teens or early 20s. She's one of the most heralded fiction writers in the world. She's from Ireland. This is a departure for her a little bit, but not really. I mean, she's still writing about the same sort of struggles of young girls and women and pain. But this is about the 2014 Boko Haram kidnapping of the Nigerian young female students. Mm-hmm. And it's told in perspective of one of those students, which seems kind of a risky leap for anyone to do, especially an Irish woman. But it's lovely. It's beautiful. She actually went and met with a lot of the people. She interviewed a lot of the victims. And she's written this from the first person, heartbreaking and hard to read, but beautiful book. Yeah. It's one of these sort of things where it's beautiful and it's so engaging and it's lovely and it's about painful things. And it's really kind of, it's a push and pull sort of relationship. I was reading last night and I was just mortified and in awe the whole time. The other book I'm just bringing up really quick is Heather Crystal's new book. I think it came out again a couple weeks ago. I don't think she's listening. I bought this book for my 19-year-old for Christmas. It's called The Crying Book. She's not listening. Because okay. I told her yesterday on the phone not to listen. She better not be listening. Okay. So it's called The Crying Book. And Heather Crystal's a poet. She has a couple books out. This is her first book of nonfiction. It took her 5 years to write. She started writing it after her good friend Bill passed away. And she sank into deep depression as she was having her firstborn child. And in that, she started to wonder what this crying thing is, why she's been crying, what it's about, why we don't talk about crying, what are these tears I'm having. And for the next 5 years, she sort of curated this sort of knowledge from herself, her friends, from science and theory about crying. And it's called The Crying Book. It is a gorgeous, beautiful, soul-edifying, emotionally challenging, wonderful, wonderful book. It's pretty slim. It looks like it's only 150 or so pages, 186 pages. And it's told in these rich emotional chunks of language. You can, Catherine and I were talking about it before we hopped on the air here. You can kind of dip in and out of this book like a nicely curated gallery or something. I can't recommend it enough, and I just started reading it.
I have to ask you what your daughter thinks of it when she reads it.
She's an English major. She's going to love it.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. I want to remind you of the Smart Talk road trip that we're taking next Wednesday to the governor's residence. On December 11th, next Wednesday, we'll be sitting down with Governor Tom Wolf for the hour. And you are invited to attend if you'd like. And there also is a tour of the governor's residence after the show at 10 o'clock. If you'd like to attend, go to WITF.org/events and RSVP. Get us an account of how many people will actually attend. But that's next Wednesday, December 11th. So if you, governor's residence is beautiful anytime, but the holiday season is just gorgeous. So I encourage you to come along and watch the show as it's being done with the governor and then take the tour afterwards. On today's program, it's our annual show on books to give for the holiday season, the ones that would make great gifts, recommendations, suggestions, things you'd like to read, maybe a question or two. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Our guest today, Carolyn Blatchley. She's the executive director of the Cumberland County Library System. Catherine Lawrence, co-owner of the Midtown Scholar Bookstore in Harrisburg. And Dr. Travis Kurowski, an assistant professor of creative writing at York College of Pennsylvania. 1-800-729-7532. Before we take a phone call, Carolyn, now that we talked about kids' books, what other recommendations do you have, maybe for adults?
So the first book I'm going to recommend for adults is Heartland by Sarah Marsh. It's her first novel. She's a first-time author, and it was chosen by the public in August as the One Book, One Community book for 2020. And so we had a vote in August. We announced it in October, and we want people to buy the book or borrow it from libraries to read and throughout January for discussions in February.
What's it about?
So it is about, it's a memoir that challenges us to look more closely at class divide within our country. It traces the author's turbulent childhood on a Kansas farm through the 80s and 90s. If you remember, a lot of farms were mm-hmm. falling apart. Their farm stayed together, but their construction business did not. And so she comes from a long generations of struggles. The fathers who were farmers, mothers who were had all their babies in their teens and didn't have opportunities to move forward economically. And so she addresses that and how she overcame that through her own education and holding off really not having children of her own and spending time on her education. But it really deals with how we address class and
very
identity
timely.
within our communities.
Very timely. Yeah. So, Catherine, what about you?
I'll give bookends to the three books you all have just talked about. Okay. So if you like memoirs like Heartland, you might also like The Yellow House, a memoir by Sarah Broom. And this just won the National Book Award for Nonfiction. Rather than being in the rural setting, it's based in New Orleans East, the story about growing up in a shotgun house there. And again, like you were saying, it echoes ideas of class and race and inequality, all written by a fabulous author who is just acclaimed for her writing and her use of language in this kind of lyrical account of growing up in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And then I've got sort of the counterparts to your books, Travis. So if yours are wonderful lyric and kind of literary, engaging, small books of dipping into, but you could also have a person to whom you want to give a book of a similar character who wants kind of the nonfiction version of it. So if you are interested in the story of depression and wanting to look at accounts of modern day psychology, our book recommendation is for science lovers, The Great Pretender, The Undercover Mission That Changed Our Understanding of Madness by Susanna Callahan. And it's written with a character of a mystery novel, though it's really about the story. It's sort of multiple stories in one. So the author has talked about and researched how in the 1970s, a Stanford psychologist named David Rosenhan and seven other people who were sane and healthy and well-adjusted basically tricked the authorities into being instituted put into mental institutions, and were they able to get out and prove their sanity? And he wrote a book about it, and then she wrote a book about that project, and it's done, the telling of it, in a very riveting, compelling way. So
you guys do realize this is the holiday season.
I think there are many folks who want to have that. And a counterpart, if, let's see, what was your other book that you had suggested there?
What? The Girl by Edna O'Brien.
Oh, yes, Edna O'Brien. Well, yeah. So if you like a journalist account of the same story, yeah, we have a book by Isha Sisse, Beneath the Tamarind Tree, and she was a journalist who reported the stories of the girls.
Was she at the store?
Mm-hmm. Yes, she was part of our book festival.
Yes, that's right. She appeared on the program.
Right.
On Smart Talk.
So
yeah,
a similar story, except the journalist account rather than the novelist account. They make a good pair of gifts there.
Travis said, yeah, I mean, obviously, that was the taking of the girls was just a tragic story, sad as can be, but there's some real heroism in there as well,
right,
and a lot of those 300 young women that were kidnapped by Boko Haram have returned now and have gotten educated, and you know, so they're. You can't say there's a silver lining, but there are some positives that have come out of it. They've fought their way out of it.
Yeah, Edna O'Brien, this is no spoilers necessarily, but this is where the book also kind of interrogates that territory, is that interrogates how those women have been often ostracized when they came back into society.
Right, that's unfortunate as well. Yeah. Let's take a phone call from Deborah. Deborah is in Harrisburg. Deborah, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Deborah Hurwitz. I'm a local author. And I wrote a wonderful children's book titled Where I Live, a first geography book for young children in the state of Pennsylvania. And actually, my book is sold in the Midtown Scholar. It's one of the places that you could purchase my book, as well as the Capitol Rotunda and Capitol Rotunda Gift Shop, the main state capitol, and the Learning Source in Camp Hill. And yet my book is just a wonderful book for children to learn about basic geography.
Well, and I understand that, Ms. Hurwitz, that you're a former educator?
I surely am. I'm a retired reading specialist. I taught also first grade, and I realized children need to know where they live as well as the vocabulary for describing these places. Mm. By reading my book and discussing its contents, children will have then the opportunity of knowing where they live in the world. It's like basic knowledge. You ask a child what state they live in, and they'll say Harrisburg. You ask them what country they live in, and they'll say Pennsylvania. You ask them what county, and sometimes they even say the Dauphin County Prison. They have no idea of basic knowledge of vocabulary about where they live in the world.
Well,
and many parents and grandparents agree with me 100% when I share my book.
I hate to say it, but there probably are some adults that may have the same answers. Deborah, thank you very much for your call. And, I had the privilege of moderating the state geography bee for a few years.
Right.
And, those young people were at the opposite end of the spectrum. I mean, they there were some things there. Some of those questions, I was like, oh, I just couldn't believe what they had. Here's some other suggestions, emails. Another Deborah says, it wouldn't be Christmas without A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, not just any version of which there are many, but the original manuscript edition with a foreword by Colm Tóibín and an introduction by Declan Keeley. The Morgan Library Museum, holder of the original manuscript, had it published in 2017 by W.W. Norton. Each facing page consists of a facsimile of the original manuscript page on the left. Now, that is really cool. And Catherine, for a store that has some historical books, some
right.
really old books,
yes.
I would imagine that with so many people who are fans of that,
right.
that they would enjoy that
oh,
version.
Oh, there's so many editions that are interesting. That's a beautiful one with the manuscript illustrations. There are also sort of the graphic novel version, the kids' version, mm-hmm. the elaborate sort of storytelling version. So there are many great ones.
Let's see. We got a few others I want to make sure that we get to. I'm having a little bit of computer issues here today. Kristen offers, I wanted to recommend all of the books by Diane Rehm. I love her, and she's written a few books about her life that serve as guides for a few different phases of adult life. My favorite is Toward Commitment, A Dialogue About Marriage. Diane and John Rehm wrote this book together. Of course, Diane Rehm used to be here on WITF, and her husband John passed away just a while back. And I had the opportunity to talk to Diane Rehm about that book and mm-hmm. some of the others that she's written. And I would agree with what Kristen has to say about that. Catherine says, The Pennsylvania Dutch Night Before Christmas, written by Chet O. I can't remember his name. He's the same person who wrote a book called How to Speak Got Your Five English, and it is an absolute hoot. The bell's nickel comes in a wagon pulled by cows, and if you can read it aloud with your children, and every year pull it out, you'll get a lot of laughter and delight. The bell's nickel thing, by the way, is
yes.
scary.
That's someone just said to me the other day, we need more Belsnickel in
no,
our lives.
No. I didn't realize Belsnickel is like the anti-Santa and from Germany, I believe. Mm-hmm. But, that's he like goes around punishing kids who have not been. Lump of coal is like the best thing you could get from
right?
Belsnickel, from what I understand. But now I know I'll get calls from Belsnickel fans. let's see. From Sharon, what do we have from Sharon? Sharon says she's at the Shippensburg University Department of English. I recommend The Penguin Book of Migration Literature, the first global anthology of its kind. It's a slim book that includes short stories, memoirs, poems, and a short graphic story from writers all over the world. Familiar with that book?
Not specifically, but we've got lots of great books on birds and the travels of birds across continents. My favorite is one by Scott Wiedenthal, who has who's written about that.
But it was
ecology.
Also local.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Scott's one of my favorites as well. We got a number of recommendations, even from staff. Russ Walker, who was with our PA Post, has four, and I'm just going to read them, and you can make some comments. Catch and Kill by Ronan Farrow. She Said by Jodi Kantor, and I'm not sure of the second because it's what he has is her Twitter handle, and I'm not sure who that author is. Milkman by Anna Burns and Frederick Douglass by David Blight, a book I know that has been getting a lot of attention over the last year or so. Your thoughts on any of those books?
Oh, yeah, I have thoughts on, especially the first book, Catch and Kill by Ronan Farrow. I mean, that's the story of, so Ronan Farrow won the Pulitzer Prize for breaking the Weinstein scandal, the Weinstein sexual assault. And he wrote that for The New Yorker. But what a lot of us didn't know, that was a story he was originally reporting for NBC and then was squashed or killed at NBC, Catch and Kill. And this is a story of Matt Lauer, of the executives at NBC, and his Ronan Farrow's research narrative about his own researching of the Weinstein scandal and how that story got squashed, how it eventually got out, and how kind of media works today. And he has in case you don't want to jump into the book, he has a podcast out you can start listening to about the book called Catch and Kill. Ronan Farrow is a fantastic journalist and a really engaging writer, both on the page and on the podcast.
All right, let's talk about some fiction. I mean, we've talked about a number of nonfiction. We've talked about kids' books. Carolyn, let me start with you. A fiction book that, or maybe a novel that someone would enjoy.
Yeah, the debut novel by Sophia Lundberg, it's actually translated into English, called The Red Address Book. And it's a beautiful tale of a woman named Doris. She's 96 years old, living in Stockholm, Sweden, by herself, but she uses Skype to communicate with her only living relative, Jenny. And Jenny lives in San Francisco, but when Doris gets sick, Jenny goes over to live with her, or to take care of her for a bit. And there's a little red address book with names crossed through it. And each of those names has a specific story that goes along with it. And so Doris decides at the end of her life, it's time to write down these stories for Jenny. And they see the parallels in their lives. There are such neat stories about how she served days as a living mannequin in Paris in the 1930s.
A living mannequin.
Living mannequin. Can you imagine how she was lost at sea? She fell off a sinking ship and rescued by a fisherman. And so just some really, really neat stories that make you reflect on her life in the 1930s.
Now, that's a fiction
book. It's a fiction book, okay. Yes. Right. It's a fiction book. But just a beautiful tale that crosses the generations.
What is it again?
It's called The Red Address Book. Sophia Lundberg is the author.
Catherine, what about you in fiction?
Yeah, I think in the summer recommendations, I had a bunch of historical novels about World War II, and I'm moving forward in time. So one of my top picks this year is The Secrets We Kept by Lara Prescott, and it's set in the Cold War. And I've got two novels to suggest here that are both sort of twists on modern literary classics. You know, we talk about maybe, I think we probably talked about, should you read Dr. Zhivago as a winter read or as a gift to give. And this book is about that book in a twisted way. So it's about how Dr. Zhivago was banned in Russia in 1956. And it's an interwoven story about two female spies, Sally and Irina, who were in a CIA typing pool, and how the CIA tried to use them to smuggle the book Dr. Zhivago back into Russia, even though it had been banned there. And then also the story of Olga, Boris Pasternak's mistress and muse, who refused ever to give up the story of Dr. Zhivago and ended up going to the gulag because of it. So you've got these... and yet, it's written like a literary thriller. So you've got kind of Cold War spies, but it's really about this book. Just not what you would expect, and a great read. And a similar book that is a great read, just the pleasure of reading, is Salman Rushdie's Quixote, which is a modern-day twist on Don Quixote. We probably all know the story of the knight, would-be knight, who goes tilting at windmills to find his love, Dulcinea. Well, Salman Rushdie has twisted that into the modern day, and his Don Quixote, Quixote, is really a pharmaceutical rep who is going across the country with his Sancho Panza, who's this invented, imagined, he's kind of mad, the character invented imagined son who is traveling in this car. So it's a road trip novel, and it's incredibly funny and amusing. So just a completely immersed in modern day popular culture. So taking Don Quixote, this classic of the first of all novels, one might say, and turning it into the modern day.
And Sir Salman Rushdie will be at the bookstore, right? Midtown Scholar Bookstore,
yes,
later this week.
On Monday, Monday evening, we still have a few tickets left for next week. He'll be coming back to the bookstore.
Talking about that book?
Yes, talking about the book and his experiences writing it and taking questions on any topic.
Mm-hmm. Travis, what about the fiction for you?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'll bring up one book. This is a book of short stories, the second book of short stories by the noted science fiction writer Ted Chiang. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. You might know him from the movie Arrival, which came out a few years back in 2016, starring Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner, mm-hmm, which I cried all the way through. If you watch it, you'll understand, especially if you have children. This is only Ted's second book. His first book came out, I think, in like 2002, and it's stories that took him over a decade to write. This is his second book, 17 years later. It's also a collection of short stories. They're all sci-fi, kind of fantasy-influenced sort of stories that I think reward reading, sitting through, and rereading again. I've only read the first two stories, the title story, Exhalation, which is the name of this collection, and then the story just before that. Those stories, like, will sit with me the rest of my life. Every time he publishes one of his stories, they win like Arthur C. Clarke or other like science fiction awards. He's a very slow, deliberate, and dedicated writer, but I think the stories pay off in that slow deliberation where you could read one kind of every few weeks. It's a lovely collection in the two stories I've already made it through. And again, his first book, The Story of Your Life, I think is what it's called, based on the title story, is also a fantastic collection. He's one of the best, not only science fiction writers working today, but just kind of fiction writers working today, though they are stories that, because of what they say about science and how bodies work and how the universe works and kind of expand the riddles of our lives, they do that but also break your heart, which I think is an excellent and amazing thing for an artist to do.
So the book and the author again?
It's this new collection of short stories is Exhalation by Ted Chiang.
Okay. All right. Got one of my own. And I know that, Catherine, that you at least have an opinion on this one. And that is Running with Sherman, Christopher McDougall, who
right,
was on our program earlier this week and was at the bookstore last week. Book about he had adopted, his family adopted a donkey that was in really bad shape. And you know, he wanted to run this donkey race in Colorado, World Championship Donkey Race. And, you know, Chris is, I mean, he is a Renaissance man. I mean, this
right,
guy has experienced so much in his life, but he's a local author. I mean, he lives in southern Lancaster County now.
Right,
but
right.
Well, how would you classify that? But I think it's so funny. There are very few books where I will laugh out loud.
Yes.
There are several times in that book where I laughed out loud.
Right, right. Just entirely engaging, the story of himself and the donkey and the interacting to bring the connection that a person can have with an animal to help recover him to health. It's really charming.
It really is. We have we only have about 15 more minutes, so I encourage you to give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. I want to remind you that there will be holiday programming on WITF from 9 to 10 for the rest of the month. Join us tomorrow for Tinsel Tales. I'll get that out, not tincture. Tinsel Tales, featuring a collection of holiday stories. Joy, hope, and childhood memories overflow as NPR voices, past and present, tell stories of the season on Tinsel Tales. That is tomorrow at 9 on WITF. Today, it's our annual gift-giving show as far as books that would make great gifts, books that you'd recommend, that we also have some suggestions from our panel. We only have about 15 more minutes, so if you'd like to make a suggestion, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. By the way, we're going to post all these on our website, witf.org, so you can read down through the list. Let's take a phone call from Heather in Lingolstown. Heather, you're on the air.
I always call for this episode because it's one of my favorites.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
My two favorite books, which I always recommend, are The Last Lecture by Randy Pausch. And it's a book of a gentleman who's diagnosed with cancer and only has a short time to live. and he decides to make his last lecture series stories of he wants to leave to his children, and it's amazing. And then the second is The Secret by Rhonda Byrne. And it's just basically a short book about what you put out in the world, what you think about is what you're going to get. So if you put out love and gratitude and thinking about great possibilities, you're going to get that. You just have to really believe in it. And I just love them because they're small books. I have ADD, so I can't stick with stuff very long. And I carry them. I give them away all the time. I get them in secondhand bookstores. I give them away. They're just great books.
Heather, thank you very much for your call. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who will take your lead on those books. Thank you very much for your call. But, you know, the point she's made, and the three of you have reminded me as we're, you know, talking about this today, people like to be inspired by books that they read. I mean, yeah, you get different emotions from books, but just what Heather was describing there and, you know, some of the books that the three of you have described today, people just like to be inspired. They, after a book, it's not to just walk away and say, oh, that was a great book. They like to get the content out of it and say, okay, I'd like to do this because I read that book. You guys agree?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yes, right.
Well, we're inspired to have our microphones up.
There we go.
Yeah, I was really, really moved by Heather's comments that she not only cherishes these books, but finds copies, gives away copies. I think that's the lovely thing about books as gifts, which, sorry, friends and family, are like the only gifts that I give, right? But especially re-giving the same book, that those are touchstones to her heart. I give out copies of Giovanni's Room by James Baldwin all the time. I have my friend who gives out God Is Not Great by Christopher Hitchens, I think, is the author a lot. I had a teacher, Stephen Barthman, in graduate school, who would always hand out Strunken White's little book on writing style. It's so touching and moving. Yeah, books mean a lot to us.
You know, something I've heard just in the last few days, I read this on social media from at least two people, that this is a tradition in their family where they give books as gifts. This is like on Christmas Eve. The children get to open one gift, and it's a book. And what they do is they read the book for the rest of Christmas Eve and eat chocolate.
Oh, wow.
That's great.
Now, I don't know if the chocolate is a must-have. I would assume so. But, I mean, just what a great tradition. I mean, there's so much going on, and there's so many things you can do Christmas Eve. But to just think about that, about two or three kids sitting down after they've unwrapped this gift and eating chocolate,
yes,
and reading a book for the rest of Christmas Eve.
Well, we didn't exactly do that with my kids, but we did. We would get out stacks of, it was a Christmas Eve activity, you get out stacks of all the Christmas kids' books, which we had quite a lot of, and kind of go through and pick which ones will be the ones to be read tonight.
Yeah. That sounds great.
So to speak to that, I had dinner with a famous book recommender, Nancy Pearl. You may be familiar with her.
Mm-hmm.
She's and she said something really inspirational to me. That she said, we only have one life, but it's through books and reading that we can experience so many other worlds, so much adventure. And so by giving books away as gifts, by visiting libraries and borrowing books and reading all that we can live many, many lives.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Let's take it to, let's go to the phone now, and Ellen is in York. Ellen, you're on the air.
Good morning. I have the book club that we're reading, The Where the Crawdads Sing by Delia Owens. Very different and very beautifully written. Also, you took the steam out of me. The other one was The Secrets We Kept. Mm-hmm. Our book club read that last month, and I believe they're going to make a movie out of it.
Actually, so, I was thinking the same thing.
The two that I would suggest. Also, I have to put a plug in. David Baldacci is the speaker for the Lancaster Women's Library Group at the end of April. The reservations will go on sale January 1st. So I just wanted everybody to know that he's actually coming to our area.
All right. Thank you very much. Are you familiar with Where the Crawdads Sing?
Oh, yeah. Every book club, I think, is reading that book. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. My mom read that recently. She loved it.
Yeah. And I guess Reese Witherspoon purchased the rights to make that into a movie.
Really?
Do I have the right person? But so they're talking about turning it into a movie.
I don't like to think of it this way, but I hate to say that some of them, like the one book you were describing, I was thinking, oh, that would make a great movie.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there are a lot of people who, but how many times have you heard people say, I saw the movie, but I like the book better?
Exactly. Yeah. That's right. Definitely. It inspires more book reading. That's fine, too. Have it made into film.
Let's take a call from Sue in Elizabethtown. Sue, you're on the air.
Good morning. I've been really enjoying a book called The Lost Words, a spell book by Robert McFarlane and Jackie Morris. This is about someone noticed that many simple nature words have been dropped from the junior Oxford dictionary because children aren't using them. They aren't getting outside enough. Simple words like acorn, bluebell, dandelion, wren. So Robert has put together a book of poems, but he doesn't want it to be called poems. He wants it to be called spells to reconjure in the imagination and in the experience of children these natural things in the natural world. They noticed that taking the place of these natural worlds in the dictionary, children's dictionary, are words like broadband, blob, paste. So then after this book was written, there was a group of folk singers who got together and put many of these spells to music in a delightful book called Spell Songs.
Well, that's great. Hey, Sue, thank you very much for your call. I mean, the point she makes, it's probably one we don't think about very often, but we do know that kids probably aren't going outdoors as much as what they used to. But I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm older, but I'm thinking they would never forget the word acorn or dandelion, would they? But if you don't see those things, it's not used in your everyday language. And it's kind of a shame that we have to have a book to remind you of that. But if we talked about living in different worlds, I guess that's one of the reasons. Sharon from Shippensburg, who called earlier, wanted to clarify. The Penguin Book of Migration Literature is about immigrants and emigrants. It's an important book about people. It's a slim book that includes short stories, memoirs, poems, and a short graphic story from writers all over the world. So I'm glad that she wrote back to clarify that. Carol recommends The Vanderbeekers of 141st by Glazer, a delightful children's story for ages 8 to 12 that runs in the same vein as the Penderwicks or Bobbsey Twins, but is contemporary, delightful, has a touch of magic realism, and a graphic novel for junior fiction readers. Okay, I just got out of it on my email, so I missed that. But are you familiar with what she's talking about?
Yes, right. And, you know, I would like to put a plug in for some. We've talked about books to inspire imagination and magical realism. And there are also on my list several works of fantasy. And I think in these dark days of, we've talked about books that are dark in nature. But I think there are a lot of readers who read maybe a slightly dark fantasy in order to see the possibilities that one could have. And you, Carolyn, were talking before about reading a book to see...
Right.
Other
living
worlds.
Many lives.
This is a very, it's more than a category. It's really a type of writing beyond the genre of fantasy. It's really taken over many of the novels that are on our table of fiction, have these elements. And I've got three for you. Ta-Nehisi Coates, who's more known as an essayist, has written a novel called The Water Dancer about a man born into bondage in pre-Civil War Virginia and his experience to get to freedom through the Underground Railroad. But it's filled with a magical realism in that storytelling. And then another one of our top sellers this year, this winter, is The Starless Sea by Erin Morgenstern. And you may know her as the best-selling author of The Night Circus. And she has a new book that has a setting in Vermont, but then it goes into the library and finds a book that book filled with magic in the library, and their keys and their clues and codes that from this book hidden in the library stacks. And that's another great one. And then finally, for young adults, the long-awaited sequel to Children of Blood and Bone is called Children of Virtue and Vengeance, just published this week by Tomi Adeyemi, and it again is this sort of dark alternative fantasy world of that draws on African fables and history for a fabulous read for those who are embark on it.
We only have about 5 minutes left. Carolyn, another book or two to recommend?
Well, we're talking about the natural world and the connection with that. Cumberland County Libraries and all the libraries of the southeast of Pennsylvania participate in the Longwood Gardens Community Read. It takes place March through May 2020. Well, every year. But this year, there are three books, one for children, one for adults, and one for teens. And the children's book is called The Enormous Potato. And children learn through this colorful picture book how a potato is grown from an eye. And this particular potato takes a whole community to make sure that it gets out of the ground. And so through
that's
that,
a big potato.
It's a big potato. And we'll have lots of activities associated with that book and community events within our libraries, like I said, throughout the southeastern region. And then for teens, we have a colorful nonfiction book that showcases weird and mysterious bizarre plants. And in fact, they have a bizarre plant or a weird plant contest going on. But this is just a lovely book to introduce the teens or any age to mysterious and wonderful plants. For the adults this year, they chose a nonfiction, a sci-fi novel, a little bit older, called Semiosis, but it's a two-part. There's a new book that just came out by the same author, Sue Burke, called Interference. It's a follow-up 100 years later, but it's a first tale of first contact where people from Earth end up on a planet where they're forced to colonize the planet where plants are actually the dominant life form. The plants can talk, the plants can, they're smarter than the people. And so I recommend if you want to go out and buy Interference, because it's a brand new book, but we will have at least 40 copies in Cumberland County alone of Semiosis. It's a great first novel.
I was just looking over your shoulder at
Weird Plants.
Weird Plants. The photography is so just gorgeous in that. We have about 3 minutes left. Travis, a couple books?
I have so many books,
I know.
Scott.
Okay.
Let's run down really quick. I mean, if you're watching Watchmen on HBO, go check out the original book. It's fantastic. The series of comics it's one of those things, like Scott was talking about earlier, one of those books that rewards rereading again and again. I've taught it multiple times, and we get something new out of it every time. Mm-hmm. If you're into the Dickinson Show on Apple TV or love the Quiet Passion movie, I mean, there's so many beautiful collections of Emily Dickinson's works. One of them I'll particularly recommend, it's A Gorgeous Nothings, which reproduces a lot of the scraps of paper here, envelopes that Dickinson wrote out a lot of her poems on. She kind of just grabbed whatever's next door. But to make up for the kind of the, as Catherine has mentioned before, kind of these sadder books that we read that I actually like, love books that engage with the world, even kind of the darker parts of it. If you want to get something that's just going to make somebody engaged, happy, kind of just live a fuller life, there's this book that just came out called Making Comics by the graphic novelist and comics artist Linda Berry, who is just one of the most fabulous people in the world and one of those inspiring people in the world. Google Lynda Berry. You probably heard of Linda Berry. She's famous for the Marley's comics she would do. But this new Making Comics book is just not just about making comics, but it's about like why we ever stopped drawing, why we ever stopped dancing, why we ever stopped singing, why we shouldn't go back to it. It's a fantastic, lovely, it's an engaging art experience itself, and I can't recommend it or any of other Linda's books kind of highly enough.
We only have a minute or so left. You know, one thing I noticed is that we don't have a lot of history-related books this time. Catherine, I'm going to turn to you and put you on the spot.
Oh, I would underscore the Frederick Douglass by David Bly.
Yes.
That's a terrific biography. We've got, on my list this year, is The Second Founding by Eric Foner, the Pulitzer Prize. You interviewed him earlier this year. How the Civil War and Reconstruction Remade the Constitution. It's under 200 pages, so it's an accessible history. And another great biography we have for the holiday season is the Susan Sontag biography, and that Her Life and Work by Benjamin Moser. And that's based on the writer's restricted archives. It includes, I think, 100 photographs and a really in-depth assessment of her legacy on art, politics, feminism, celebrity style, radicalism. She's actually in our famous philosophers section, and that's a great biography.
I want to thank the three of you for with. I wish we had more time because we all have, and you'll see the photographs if you go to our website, WITF.org/smarttalk. That what do you think? We have about 30 books piled up here.
That's right, at least.
Piled up here. Even though it's radio, we have them all piled up. But I want to thank the three of you. I know you've given some great ideas to a lot of our listeners out there, and I hope the three of you enjoy your holidays and what you've contributed to us this year. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
And again, no Smart Talk tomorrow, but we will be back on Monday. And one of the things we talk about, speaking of art, talking about some of the art at the Capitol and how it relates to the 19th Amendment, the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment women's suffrage. That's coming up on Monday's show. Have yourself a great weekend. I'll talk to you on Monday.